is the Auburn Podcast. Orange and True is an Auburn Podcast. Orange and True is an Auburn Podcast. You're listening to it now. Ryan S. Starrett is making up rumors. Ryan S. Starrett is making up rumors. Ryan S. Starrett is making up rumors. You're listening to it now. Chief chews ice into a microphone. Chief chews ice into a microphone. Chief chews ice into microphone. You're listening to it now. My name is Crow. I sing stupid songs. My name is Crow. I sing stupid songs. My name is Crow. I sing stupid songs. You're listening to one now. War Eagle, Auburn Tigers. War Eagle, Auburn Tigers. War Eagle, Auburn Tigers. You're listening to it now. Now that can be stuck in your head too. Welcome to Orange and True Podcast, harbored by College of Magnolia.com. It's I, Son of Crow. Ryan is with me, as is the Chief. Chief, can you read me?
Mahalo.
Ryan, can you read me?
Only thing I'm going to be reading is defenses on NCAA 2024, maybe? I don't know. Whenever it comes out.
Why didn't they just announce that literally any other day? Hey, guys, in a couple of years, maybe we'll do this thing again. We could have done it any day.
What was wrong with the day that they did it?
Because everybody thought it's coming out next week. And they just said, in a couple of years, we're going to make this game again that you all thought we were going to make in a couple of years.
What if they did the Taylor Swift thing, just drop it, fully done, ready to go?
See, that's what they should have done.
I think they dropped it because then they do their earnings call.
Yeah.
They should do the U2 thing and just go ahead and put it on everyone's PS5s. Whether they like it or not. Like, oh, I have this now? That U2 album's underrated, by the way. Everyone hated it because they just did that. It's actually a pretty decent record.
I never understood hating it because it was free.
Yeah. People hate it because it was free.
Like what, you didn't know Apple could just put stuff on your phone?
Well, wasn't it on the iPod that they put it on, or was it on the iPhone?
Everyone's iTunes. It was everyone's iTunes.
Yeah, that's right. I had it too.
Yeah.
You had limited space on your iPod back then, right? It's not like today.
But it was like 8 songs.
And a couple of them were bangers. I put it up there with anything they've released since 2005.
Well, it's a low bar to clear.
No, Out of the Horizon. I don't remember when that came out. I'm a big U2 fan, by the way. You guys don't realize that about me. But yeah, I think it's one of their better records. I put it in the top five U2 records.
Wow.
But that said, we welcome tonight someone who's not here to talk about The Edge and Bono and Michael Clayton.
Unless those are other group names.
Other members of the band U2.
Michael Clayton sounds like a guy that could play linebacker.
Is that his name, Michael Clayton? Yeah, I think that's right. Anyway,
I want to sign just a one name guy.
The Edge.
Yeah, not just a one name, a guy with just a title, The Edge.
What if The Edge played like inside linebacker? It'd be really confusing.
Like the wrestler? Is that what we're talking about? Edge?
No, The Edge is the guitarist for the band U2.
Oh no, I was thinking about Edge, WWE.
No.
He just win the Royal Rumble?
Probably. He stole his name from The Edge.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
Anyways, our guest, we should probably actually get to him.
Yeah, it is not Larry Mullen Jr., also a member of the band U2. It is the AU Nerd. AU Nerd, how are you?
Well, I just want to say this. Today, there's a defensive lineman in Texas who goes by Bear. Or Big Bear, sure. And he just committed to Georgia. So I don't really understand what the point is anymore. I feel like we've really lost the Auburn's edge. Speaking of edges,
So we could have had a big cat and a big bear.
We could have had a big cat and a big bear, and we just let it go through our hands.
Is he from the Metroplex? Shame.
Actually, I don't know where he is.
You would be shocked at the number of Georgia stickers that I see on cars in the DFW Metroplex, and I.
Denton, Texas?
Yeah, the Metroplex. I think Matt Stafford going to Georgia like really opened up this entire area to the dogs. Like, I know for a fact a bunch of people from Highland Park High School, where Matt Stafford went to Georgia because that's where Matt Stafford went.
That's ridiculous.
Do you know who coached Matt Stafford at Georgia?
Mike Bobo.
Oh, there you
Clayton
go.
Kershaw, right?
Clayton Kershaw, also from Highland Park High School. They were classmates.
Were they friends?
I imagine so.
Is there any chance they're in a picture together or anything?
I'm sure. I'm sure it's been showed a billion times. Anytime either one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. It has.
Great.
It has on what? Something that I don't watch, like baseball or something?
Pretty much, because the Dodgers are in the World Series every year, and now Matt Stafford's in L.A.
What's the most famous athlete that you've been in a picture with?
Ooh. Adrian Peterson.
Oh. And I should say, in a picture, not that you were like, oh, my God, it's that famous athlete. Let me take a picture with him.
Oh. Does it count if it's like I'm at a game and it's a picture of the field behind me and they're on the field?
No.
Damn.
Well, Adrian Peterson, I was at a track meet and he was in it.
Oh, that's close.
In high school.
I don't think you being at a track meet and Adrian Peterson being at a track meet is the same track meet.
Well, our high schools were competing against one another.
Competing is a loose term.
My buddy, who I was there to watch, beat him in the 100-meter dash. But I'm also in a photo with Christopher Davis, the first baseman for the Orioles, because he and I are buddies.
There you go.
We were buddies in high school.
Nice. Okay. That's what I was looking for, that kind of thing.
That's as close as I get to actual, like.
This got me beat. But
I have a picture of me and Bryce Brown in Minneapolis.
Yeah, no, it's my high school friend that pitched at Mercer, got drafted, and like played the minors for a couple years.
Nice. Nerd?
I don't know. I mean, I was in a team photo with
there you go.
Gabe McKenzie, or not Gabe McKenzie, Mike McNeil.
There you go.
So there you go.
That's about. Are there any pictures of you bodying up DeMarcus Cousins?
No. Thankfully, there are no pictures of our encounters.
That's about on par with me. There's several pictures of me with former Alabama safety Marcus Carter. That'd probably be the closest. Mine is.
Gabe McKenzie is pictures of the better Auburn players.
He's the most.
Gabe McKenzie is an Auburn player that I will never sell my Gabe McKenzie stock. I don't know what it is. There are a couple of players that's like, you cannot tell me he couldn't have been.
He played at my high school. He played at my high school. Like I hadn't played football when he was playing with him. That's why I pulled it back. But the best was watching him on the basketball court, because he also played on our basketball team.
Yeah.
And he was just a giant man and athlete who came at Auburn at the exact wrong time.
He was an insane athlete and was just completely misused. And
Ryan, he caught like zero passes as a tight end. Then they moved him to defensive end, and he had a pick six against LSU.
I remember this,
in 2012. And it's like,
I remember being really confused looking at the roster for that year, seeing him as a tight end, and that he recorded a pick six.
In 2008, he had a pick six. So his only touchdown came as a defensive end. But it showed in that moment, oh, you know what? That dude probably had good enough hands and speed. We should have thrown him the ball.
My buddy that was a walk-on tight end swore to me he was the best athlete on the team. The entire time he was here.
Was that buddy me? Although I wasn't the because
That would honestly be incredible, though, if at the end of it, the crow that you were actually a walk-on tight end at Auburn.
Yeah,
I feel like that would really just complete the whole narrative.
Here's the thing. I know several walk-on tight ends from Fort Payne, Alabama, that went to Auburn.
I played tight ends.
They didn't all stay tight ends.
But before we get into the signing day information with Nerd, I do want to play my favorite recruit game we've ever done on this show. We'll do a mini version for today. Does Crow know Crute or Star Wars character edition?
Are these Auburn Crutes? Because I've been reading the AU Nerd columns.
Okay, so I've got five names.
Okay.
If you've been reading, maybe you'll know them, but I don't know. We'll see. The reason I want to do this is because I just finished Clone Wars today, and I've got some Clone Wars names in here. All right, number one, Garner Langlo.
What was it?
Garner Langlo.
Garner Langlo. That's a Star Wars character.
Tell me, guys, who is it?
Oh, Crow. I feel like you may have been fibbing earlier about He's a three-star offensive lineman coming to Auburn.
That's right. Offensive tackle, right?
That was.
He's not the long snapper.
Didn't they change him to offensive tackle or something?
He's kind of a swing guy. Like he actually played guard right. in high school, but he's 6'7", and he's big enough to play outside. So I didn't recognize
the name, but it didn't sound like a Star Wars name. I was going to say right off the bat,
that's the best one. I think in terms of like, could it be a Star Wars character in a recruit? Yeah. That was by far the best name.
All right. Number two, Cham Syndulla.
That's a Star Wars character.
It is.
Because I would have remembered
had to suppress a laugh. that could have been...
I would have recognized a Chom had we had one sign issue. Maybe the problem is we didn't have enough Choms.
Let's make this a little more fun. You have to tell me if they're a recruit or a Star Wars character and then describe them like either a position or what they do in the Star Wars universe.
Oh, Chom, I don't know. I haven't watched any of the Clone Wars. But I'm imagining he has something to do with... He is either guarding a giant thing that is way too easy to blow up, or he is going to try to blow that thing up.
A little of both. A bit of both.
Oh.
Chief, you want to tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, he's leading the resistance on the planet. What is it called? Tython? No, not Tython. I'm blanking on the planet. Anyway, the planet that the Twi'leks are from.
Sure.
Ryloth. There we go. And he is also trying to blow up Imperial stuff. Or not Imperial stuff. The robot.
Separatist stuff.
Separatist. There we go. Stuff.
Number three, Tobechi Okali.
It's also a Star Wars character.
What kind of Star Wars character?
Tobechi Okali is an African name. So that guy's probably from Tobechi Okali. He's West African. And I bet that he plays along the defensive line.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he actually is from Nigeria originally.
Boom!
There you go.
So
247 does list his hometown as Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, he moved there. He started playing a few years ago.
Yeah, it's far West Africa.
stole him from the Cornhuskers. Oh, Coach
Number
G.
Number four.
Description from him.
Jocko Willis.
Okay, Jocko Willis is a recruit because he's I remember thinking that was a hilarious name.
Is it Jocko or is it Joko?
I don't know, and I don't. Joko. I'm trying to remember when Harson said it earlier today. Because wow. I've said Joko, but I've heard Jocko. And I like
pronouncing it.
Coaches would never get anybody's name wrong either.
Yeah.
I'm only going to pronounce it Joko. Like it's a French J.
There you go. Joko.
Joko Willis.
Pong Krell.
Je m'appelle Joko Willis. What is it?
Pong Krell.
That's a Star Wars character. That's a joke. Pong Krell is probably a foot and a half tall, yet somehow incredibly strong. And either with the force or physically strong. And I bet Pong Krell has witty remarks to make towards human characters.
Tell me about him, Chief.
You could not be more wrong about that one, my friend. You got the force powers thing right. He is a giant bug man. Do you remember, I know you may have slept through most of Attack of the Clones, as many people did. But there's the guy in the diner that Obi-Wan talks to that looks like a big bug.
I haven't seen that movie since it came out.
Anyway, it looks like he's clearly based on the cockroach bad guy from Men in Black. And this guy is a big, portly version of that almost, but thick, we'll call
him.
Does
he ask for water? Sugar water.
He actually does not Pong Krell, but the one in Attack of the Clones kind of does talk like that. This guy is a Jedi.
Wearing an Egger suit.
walks. He's a Jedi who descends into madness. Sort of. It's a Heart of Darkness type thing.
Wow.
and kind of goes to the dark side, starts killing clones and stuff, and he's a bad dude.
He's cool because he's got four arms and swings all the day. He has two Darth Maul lightsabers.
Yeah, spoiler.
So JT, two double JT Thor type character.
Yeah, sure.
All arms and legs. And
yeah, yeah.
Viciousness.
It's a little thicker than JT, but yeah.
Well, so is Paperclip.
All right. Well, enough fun.
Enough fun. Here's the rest of the podcast.
No more fun. Information only. Nerd, why are we so bad at recruiting now?
Well, because we're a basketball school.
You're right.
As a basketball school, you have to exchange stars. It's a simple, it's like a checks and balances thing.
Yeah, so like Kentucky got good at football, and then they're an awful basketball program now.
Exactly. But it's definitely been a weird year. Coaching changes in the middle of early signing period is I wouldn't recommend it. I'd recommend making your – if you're going to get rid of a coach, getting rid of him maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks earlier before early signing day, because otherwise you're going to run into this problem. But I think overall, given what Harsin was left with, you know, I think he did a solid job on the remaining prospects here in the final period.
It seems like the biggest thing is that we didn't really lose anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that we have some big names that were – committed or, you know, signing in the early period, and nobody really left ship, and you kept Tank Bigsby. So
yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, we were sort of headed in this direction anyway, whether we had fired Gus or not, right?
So we were Auburn would likely have finished as a top 15 class, closer to top 10, because Auburn was kind of doing some star grabbing. They're just going out there they're going to take Terrence Lewis, the five-star linebacker out of South Florida, who Jimbo Fisher thinks has too many red flags.
Okay, yeah, that's not good.
I think he's a pretty good pass rusher out of South Carolina named George Wilson, who ended up going to Florida State that they were trying to get. There was a JUCO kid that ended up going to Tennessee. There was a lot of guys at the early signing period. You know, Trevin Wallace would have signed with Auburn because he would have Travis Williams would still be there. Armani Goodwin maybe jumps back on board. But it was still going to be one of Malzahn's lower classes. The bigger thing, though, is the 2022 class was going to be a nightmare for Gus Malzahn in terms of what he'd have to deal with negative recruiting-wise. That I think you kind of bite the bullet on this one in hopes of laying the groundwork and start rebuilding and start getting back up into the top 10 with better recruiting class in the future. But yeah, it was going to be in the back end. It wasn't going to be this bad. Like Auburn missed some, you know, sure it would be nice to have Armani Goodwin and, Trevin Wallace and Dante Balfour and some of these guys in the class, but it's not enough to deal with what we would have to deal with again in the next year.
So is it all the coaching change to blame?
It's a mixture. So I think, you know, so here's like Brian Harsin. So just an example of what was left for Brian Harsin to recruit. Of Rivals' top 250 recruits, 235 of them signed in December. So starting out the gate, there's 15 prospects that are in the top 250 that are even signable. Half of those were likely already committed. Like you have a guy like five-star running back Kamar Wheaton, who's committed to Alabama. That guy's not going to be like, oh yeah, no, this staff looks like they're doing great down there at Auburn. I'm going to jump over that way. So it was very much, they're going to have to go deep on their evaluations and find guys within the small amount of talent pool left to get in. I think overall they did well in that. You know, there are two misses. The Trevin Wallace miss is more, with Travis Williams not coming back, he's a four-star linebacker out of Georgia. 247 bumped him to the number 35 player in the country. I think that's a little high. I think he's really good. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a borderline five-star, but he's a really good player. He was going to come here, but purely for Travis Williams. So when Travis wasn't retained, it was almost personal at that point, where it's like, I'm not coming here because he didn't keep my coach. And he ended up going to Kentucky. The other one, Dante Balfour, is kind of the really only one that I would say is a clear miss. He's a guy that was going to sign with Auburn in the early period. He decided to wait. North Carolina and LSU kind of jumped in. North Carolina took a big lead. Auburn made a big push, but they couldn't get him back on board. That's kind of a recruitment, though, you would have liked to see Auburn win. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is they went on and they did win battles that they absolutely should against teams like South Carolina and Mississippi State and some of these other ones where they didn't lose these battles that you would go, oh, like we're getting beat by South Carolina for in-state 3 stars. Like that would be a problem. And that didn't happen.
Is this class done? Because it seems like there's a lot of open spots left.
No, it's not at all done. Avery Harston said that. Auburn still, I expect at least one more signee this week. On Friday, 3-star running back out of Philadelphia, Mississippi, Jarquez Hunter is going to commit, and it'd be a shock if he went anywhere else.
Play basketball? Because we do well recruiting basketball out of Philly.
Well, this is Philadelphia, Mississippi.
I
stayed overnight there.
Close enough.
There you go. I like
Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Yeah, dog.
Lord.
It's what you imagine it would be. It's not big.
but he's probably going to commit Friday. There's been this talk. I don't know how to say his last name, but Darren Usher. Baby, the guy, the new director of recruiting for Auburn, came with Harson from Boise State, made this kind of cryptic tweet about it being flipless, that Auburn had flipped someone. And everybody was like, please tell me you didn't do this about flipping a kid from South Alabama, which was Caden Bridges, who Auburn got, who's a good player, but that's not something you really want people going nuts about. And, you know, per
baseball player too, right?
Yeah. I'll talk about him in a minute, but,
Ryan, wait for your turn.
Keith Niebuhr at Auburn Undercover says there's, you know, Auburn believes there's a flip coming still this week. So, chances are good. They're going to get two more this week. There's also still Dylan Brooks, who's trying to get out of his letter of intent with Tennessee, and he's coming to Auburn if he gets out of his letter of intent. Which would also help Auburn's class rankings because he's a top 100 player. And then after that, you're going to see hit the transfer portal. I think you're going to see Auburn try to get a running back, a linebacker, and an offensive tackle, and maybe a defensive back. This class won't be done till August.
Is there any truth to the rumor that?
Go ahead, girl.
Is there any truth to the rumor that Auburn is attempting to get Cam Newton to put on a novelty mustache and play quarterback for it next year?
Well, if they give him the right hat. I think
that's a really good idea.
If they get him the right hat, they can slide him out there. No one will know.
Because he might be looking for a team, and we are looking for a Jesus Thunderback to play for us again.
I'll say this. If Brian Harsin can get Cam Newton to re-sign and come back, that would be a big recruiting win early in his tenure.
It'd be huge.
His brother still on the roster?
He's still on the roster. So
you should ask him that $180,000 for the gift or a loan, Cam.
Something that sticks out to me is that under Gus, it seemed like we would sign 4 receivers every year, and I only see one wide receiver on here, Hal Presley out of Texas. Am I missing anybody, or is this going to be a new thing?
Well, Tarverish Dawson, who signed today, is he's listed as an athlete. He could play defensive back or wide receiver. I think he wants to play offense, and Harson wants him on offense. So that's what he'll be, but it'll be only those two. I don't think they see – I do think, it's still early, but definitely one of Malzahn's biggest struggles in terms of recruiting. He recruited a ton of talent, like just – pure athletic talent. There's a lot of really good players on his team, but it was more of like, what's your role? What's your purpose? Am I fitting into a system? Do I have a plan for you? You look at guys like Harold Joyner is a great example of like, what's the plan for an athlete with his skill set? I think with Harson, you're going to see more of that, and you're going to see a little more roster balance in terms of how they recruit. Because definitely they've hit defensive backs hard, and a lot of that is just to build back up that backfield, losing Jordan Peters, Christian Tutt, Jamie and Sherwood, and then also you see the guys are about to leave. So We still got to see more. It's so early. It's really hard to truly evaluate what Horst is going to do, what's he good at, what's he not good at. But that was definitely a struggle of Malzahn. That's something that I expect Harson to do a better job of.
What's the offensive line class look like?
Well, it has, you know, based off the way Auburn is listing Gardner Langlois, it has two offensive tackles from the high school ranks.
That's twice as many as the last 4 years, right?
Yeah. Per 247, both Justin Osborne and Cameron Stutz were listed as offensive tackles coming out of high school. Stutz has been moved to guard, and Osborne has transferred. So that was basically it. Garner Langlo, he's kind of a swing guy. I mentioned that earlier. He's kind of a swing guy. He could play guard or tackle. It sounds like they're going to start him at tackle. But Colby Smith, who Auburn signed today, former Tennessee commit, has a really good relationship with new Auburn offensive line coach Will Friend, who is going to go get offensive tackles. I feel very confident in that. Big kid. He's like 6'7", 320. But you look at him and you go, man, he could put some more weight on. Like it's almost a weird way. It's almost a thin 6'7", 320. He's a guy that could get bigger and stronger. Good player out of North Carolina. But he's got
JJ Peggy's body, you know, nice and slim.
Yeah, you know, maybe a little slimmer. Maybe a little slimmer than JJ. there are no JJs in this class. I will say that is a disappointment. There's no 6'2". 300-pound tight ends. But no, it's a solid, you know, it's two offensive linemen. That's way too few, but at least there are two tackles. I do think Auburn's going to hit the portal. You could see them take both an offensive tackle and an interior offensive lineman in this class, depending how things shake out. But I think you're going to see Auburn sign a big class in the 2022 with Will Friend.
That's
so what is that, the sorry, Chief, go ahead.
That's comforting, just based on we've gotten to where we are right now because we haven't been doing that and going after. They seem to realize, hey, that's what we've got to do, yeah. And that doesn't feel like we've had anybody that's been like, hey guys, maybe we should recruit some offensive linemen. Like it doesn't even feel like it's been suggested the last 4 years.
I think one of Malzahn's biggest struggles as a recruiter was I feel like his boards were too small. So like I feel like the targets he would hone in on would be too few, especially at offensive tackle. I mean, it wasn't like Auburn went out there and just, you know, said, oh, let's go get that sad little 3-star down there and hopefully he turns into player. Like sure. He went after the best. Like they swung for right. The best. And they were in the race for a ton of the top guys. You look at guys at like, you know, Broderick Jones jumps to mind. Guys like those where they were legitimate players, Dylan Fairchild. But they never landed them. And the problem was after they landed them, there was no next tier. There was no sort of next plan. It was, all right, well, I guess we'll go to the portal. I think you're going to see a better Auburn recruiter have a bigger board, have a wider base of what they're recruiting. But, you know, just early on in the 2022 class, you already see Auburn get some traction with some important guys, quite a few blue chips, quite a few 4-stars. So, but you can tell it's a priority. I think within 24 or 48 hours of Will Friend being hired, Auburn sent out like 8 offers to offensive tackles, including a 4-star in Columbus, Georgia, that said Gus Malzahn hadn't even talked to him. So I think that stuff has changed. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think if you can't get the very best, you should go for volume.
Yeah,
it's better to be a volume shooter at O-line than not.
Yeah, and the portal's not a bad play. I mean, they had some great hits there. I mean, Jack Driscoll was a very good player in the NFL. You know, Austin Golson. There were some good hits. The problem is. Part of the reason why Malzahn's teams were felt so fragile is there was no depth. And so it's like, I'm going to go get this one transfer portal guy. But if that guy gets hit or injured, like Brandon Council gets hurt, there's nothing there. All of a sudden, it just feels like you're, again, just on the fly trying to put pieces together. So I think the hope moving forward is if you can do a better job of signing 3 to 5 offensive linemen every class, and that is a class including good balance between guards and tackles. You go get the portal guy that makes a lot of sense for you, that you can plug right in and start and help you, but you're not reliant on the portal. It's you a starting caliber tackle.
Yeah, well, we're still kind of going to have to rely on the portal. Do you know any, do you have any like idea, any targets that might be there in the portal for us?
It's hard. I will say the portal recruiting, what's crazy about that is it feels like names pop out of nowhere. I mean, nobody had the Eku Leota, who's the Northwestern transfer coming to Auburn.
Who I'm actually, excited about him, by the way.
Oh, he was playing out of position at Northwestern. He's an outside linebacker all the way. He fits that stud role or buck role. And Auburn's defense perfectly. He has more career sacks than anyone on Auburn's roster. He has 6.5 sacks in his career, and that's with some limited snaps. So, worst case, he's Derek Hall's competent backup. I think that's a really good pickup. But, you know, no one kind of saw that one coming. There's three linebackers that Auburn has been linked to. Mike Jones out of Clemson.
Who?
Mike Jones out of Clemson.
I have his phone number in my phone still.
I know. I think everybody's hoping that ends up being the pick. There's Henry. I can always butcher his last name. Henry Tuto, the guy from Tennessee.
Sure.
But he's not coming to Auburn. He's probably going to go to either Oregon or USC. And then there's a former USC linebacker, and I'm trying to remember. It's like he's another name that I don't. It's like Howie Gawawat. I don't know. I'm butchering it. A USC transfer linebacker that Auburn's looking at. But I think you're going to see those. I don't really have any. You know, Auburn went after Keonta Ingram out of Texas. The whole reason he left Texas is because he was stuck behind Bijan Robinson, who's the only other running back that you could claim is at the same caliber as Tank coming into 2021. So it would have been weird to see him leave Texas to – being stuck behind Robinson, to be stuck behind Tank. He ended up going to USC. So now, not really. I think more than likely that you're just going to see some names pop, or you'll hear, you know, the night before buzz come out that Auburn's, you know, honing in on a guy. So, but
what is our running back room look like today?
It's an interesting room. You've got Tank Bigsby, who is PFF just dropped it tonight, named him the number one running back coming into 2021. Everybody knows he's a beast. You've got Sean Shivers, who every single offseason is rumored to be transferring, but never transfers. You've got Devin Barrett, my first love when it came to Auburn recruiting evaluation time. I thought this dude was the next Trey Mason. Loved his skill set, incredibly productive out of Tampa Catholic in Florida. Coached by Jairus McIntyre. He's back at running back. Brian Harsin confirmed that today.
Ryan, Jairus McIntyre was a wide receiver, played for Auburn. And then in the NFL, he was really, really good.
Sure. Sorry. Did you know his father also played at Auburn?
Yeah. There you go.
Sure.
So many fun facts. Sorry, Chief. Sorry.
Is Devin Barry going to actually get to run the ball, or is he just a swing pass caster?
That's what we're going to see. I don't expect him to become Trey Mason now that he's back there, but it will be interesting to see how he performs. At least gives Auburn three scholarship running backs this spring. And then Friday, they're going to sign, barring any kind of crazy surprises, Jarquez Hunter, the kid out of Mississippi, who I really like. He's 6 foot, 200, 210 pounds. He doesn't have elite top end speed. Like, he's not going to be outrunning a ton of SEC defenses, but he's got really good vision, moves well laterally. He's really good in kind of zone based run schemes, which is what Auburn's going to do a ton of under Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo. A lot of outside zone, a lot of inside zone. And I think this guy fits that well. I think he's a solid kind of number two back. I think the hope is Auburn can go get kind of a big stud in the 2022 class. But those are kind of the four guys that are going to go in to the fall, and that's why I think you're going to see Auburn try to get someone from the portal. Although, who knows? Maybe this surprise flip is another running back recruit to keep an eye on. So it's an interesting room because you've got literally the best, and then you've got Sean Shivers, who is an effective running back, and probably a good counter, and then you've got just a whole bunch of unknowns. So we'll see what happens.
I am the preeminent Sean Shivers apologist. Yeah. probably in the Auburn Twitterverse. And I really think that he compliments Tank Bigsby extremely well and has yet to have a game where I'm like, man, Sean Shivers is just such trash. So I'm actually excited to see what he's able to do in a different offense, because I've always said Sean Shivers at Oklahoma would have been one of the most productive offensive players in America.
He needs a lane. You give him a lane, even if there's someone in there. There's a human body in the lane somewhere. He'll just run into it.
He hasn't had a lot of lanes, but no one's really had a ton of lanes.
Right, that's part of the problem. Is I feel like his Auburn's offensive line hasn't been a great. I mean, it hasn't been great for a lot of people, but for Shivers especially, it's not been great. But yeah, no, I love Shivers too. I think he does a great job. But I don't think Auburn needs another guy back there that you can trust to carry the load and in kind of big moments.
Are there any potential standout freshmen in this class? Because I'm looking at it and I don't see – I mean, there's no five stars.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem like there's going to be anybody that you're like, oh, he's a gamer. He's going to play day one.
Yeah. So I think there's a few guys I'm keeping an eye on. Like, first off, obviously Lee Hunter is someone you're going to pay attention to. Auburn's top-rated commit. He was once a five-star early on in the process and kind of slowly fell to about 110. So he's still highly regarded.
Did he happen to slide after he committed to Auburn?
It did. In fact, that actually did happen.
Man, who could have seen that coming?
he had something crazy like 20 tackles for loss last year. I mean, this past year, he's a massive guy. I didn't realize how big he was until I watched some of his reps in the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game. Big, big dude. I don't think he's a Derrick Brown. I've seen some people make those kind of comps that he's got that type of skill set. I don't think he's got the same type of explosiveness or be the same type of pass rusher that Derrick Brown is, but this dude is going to eat space. He's going to swallow offensive lines. I think he's got a great chance to be a starting nose tackle for Auburn. Maybe not this year, but he'll be in the rotation early. I think Demetrius Davis is going to be important to Auburn this year. I don't think he's unseating Bo Nix as the starting quarterback, but for Auburn to go into the season and have confidence in their backup quarterback and know that their backup quarterback is also not going to transfer in the middle of the year is going to be big, because it's going to let the staff maybe feel comfortable running Bo some more.
I mean, a backup quarterback that is not about to transfer, that is capable of both running and throwing, and is also not eligible for the senior citizen discount at McDonald's. That's a pretty unbelievable thing.
It is. It's been a long time. It's been a long time since Auburn's kind of been in that position. Even think back when they had Jarrett Stidham and Sean White, and then they lost Sean White halfway through the year. So it's been a long time since you could say, okay, there's two competent quarterbacks on roster. But again, I don't think he's going to be starting. Guys, I think the two positions I think are going to be interesting where I think a player can make an early impact is wide receiver and defensive back. Wide receiver, because there's a ton of young talent there, but none of it's proven. So there's going to be a ton of opportunities there. Hal Presley out of Texas, you mentioned him earlier. There's a lot of Seth Williams to his game. Now, he's not the same type of jump ball artist that Seth is. Like, I think he's good at jump balls, but I don't expect him to come in and do some of the insane things that Seth did. But I think he's got better top-end speed. Like, I think he's faster than Seth, so he can get down the field better. He had a monster senior year. I think he's got a very good chance to see the field early. I like Tavarish Dawson a lot. He reminds me of – he signed with Auburn today. They beat out Texas A&M for him. Tennessee trying to make a run late. Quite a few programs trying to come after him. He reminds me a lot of actually Boise State's leading receiver of the last 2 years, Khalil Shakir. He's built in that same type of mold. I'm betting he plays the same type of role, the flanker position in their offense, which runs a lot of kind of intermediate routes. There's some Ryan Davis, maybe is another good comparison. He's a guy that will catch the ball, make guys miss in space. So those two guys
could have a language with that.
I think those two guys could make an early impact. And then in the secondary, I think there's going to be chances, especially at safety. Amari Harvey, who's a four-star out of Tallahassee, Florida, literally attended Florida State University High School or something crazy like that. Very smart kid. You watch his tape and it feels like he's breaking on the ball exactly where it's going to go before the quarterback's even made up his mind. Like, he seems to have a really good understanding of the game. I think he's a guy that will probably see time behind Smoke back there at free safety. And then I think some of these really lower ranked guys that you saw Auburn sign, so, you know, today Auburn signed Caden Bridges, who Ryan mentioned earlier, out of Mississippi. I'm a huge fan of him. Watching his tape, you just jumps out. You go, this kid can play. He's from McGee, Mississippi, which is like a town of like 4,000 people. No one knew of this kid 2 to 3 weeks ago. His two best offers were Central Arkansas and Florida A&M. South Alabama's new staff found him. They got a hold of the senior tape, offered him, landed his commit, and then Auburn found him. And supposedly Derek Mason loves this guy. Immediately jumped to the top of Auburn's safety board. I think you could see him early. And then Kamal Hayden, the junior college signing.
That dude,
early rolling.
That dude hits like a truck.
Bridges?
Yeah, and I watched his highlight tape that Auburn posted on Twitter today, and my initial concern was, oh, we might get like 5 targeting calls a season with this dude. Like, my immediate thought was, this dude is a prototypical junior Rose Green safety. And I don't know if that excites me or worries me.
he's definitely a heavy hitter. The big question of him is, does he have the speed? If he's got the speed, he's got a chance to be one of those guys that we look back on and say, well, there was Auburn got this guy late, you know, kind of like they did with Daniel Thomas or some of these other ones in the past where they've hit on some kids. So, so those are the kind of guys I'm paying attention to in terms of senior early impact. But you're right. I don't think you're going to see – there isn't like a Carl Lawson in this class or a Tank Bigsby or a guy that you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's going to be on the field and making a huge impact immediately.
So Auburn may have filled out its in NFL terms – People talk about like there are times in the draft where you're not filling out your top 25 players, but you are filling out your 25 to 53 on your roster. Auburn may have been filling out kind of its bottom. If your bottom, you know, 20 guys are better today than they were yesterday, then that's an improvement. That's a good day because you're improving your depth.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a good class to evaluate how good the staff is at evaluating kids. You know, can they bring in kids that maybe have a weak spot in one area or maybe we're too short or too slow or whatever, and the reason why they're a three-star, and find roles for them to be successful. And I think you're going to see, you know, these are guys that you want in your program and you're hoping in 2 to 3 years are major contributors. So yeah, I think that's a good comparison for a lot of these signees. The other guy I want to mention, though, early impact guy, Juwan Gaston, signed with Auburn out of Montgomery, Alabama. 7 kick returns for touchdowns this season, 3 punt returns. I think you'll at least see him get a chance. Put him back there against Alabama A&M and say, see what you can do at this level. He's a guy that can make an impact immediately on special teams, for sure.
So who's my favorite player going to be off this team?
Ooh. Bridges is a good one. I think Jocko or Joko, 6'3".
I think it's Joko.
Joko, yeah. He's a guy that I really don't know where he fits because his skill set, you could play him at outside linebacker. You could put 25 pounds out on him and put him at middle linebacker. You can line him up on the edge and have him rush the passer. Really good athlete. We know you're going to love any of these Texas boys, you know.
Sure.
Demetrius Davis, Landon King, tight end out of Texas that Auburn signed. He's enrolled early, 6'5 kid, 210. And I'll say this about him. It's not often that a tight end is lined up as a running back in their high school tape. But they just wanted to get him the ball. So they would just hand him the ball and let him run it.
Where's he from, Landon King? Do you know?
Oh, I'm going to have to look that one up.
I think it says Humble, Texas.
Yes, Humble, Texas.
Yeah, I know where that is. That's fascinating. Where is that? I didn't know we signed a kid out of there.
You know, we signed 3 out of 10. We would have had 4 if Jaden Roberts had stuck. So Chad Morris did leave Auburn some nice players. So, but those are the ones I feel like. And then maybe, you know, maybe Tebeki or Tebeci Okoli.
Yeah.
Upsides through the roof, but he's just still – early. I mean, he only started playing football like 2-3 years ago.
Ryan Humble's between Houston and what is that town? Nacogdoches. It's northeast-ish of Houston.
Oh.
Gotcha.
Yep. Pretty close. So, close to Huntsville, Texas, I believe Humble is, which means he probably stole him from the from the Cats down there at Sam Houston State.
Well, actually, we took him from the Horns, from the Longhorns.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, back when Tom Herman was a – that's a crazy thing. Chad Morris and Gus Malzahn were battling Tom Herman or whatever just a few months ago in the state of Texas for recruits.
Back in the day.
Back in the day, back in those old days.
The before time.
Back in the before time. I can't even – I don't know anything about Texas recruiting class. I haven't heard anybody say a good thing about it. So
they lost out on the number two running back to Jimbo today. So.
Mm. Oh, you hate to see that.
Actually, I do because
– I know. I hate to see it.
Now we have to play him for 3 years.
Yeesh. Well, you know, Jimbo Fisher is a noted developer of talent. So mm-hmm.
He'll be the exact same when he graduates, which is probably still pretty good.
Yeah.
Or every year he'll be hyped as he's got to be the best returner at his position, a la Kellen Mond. And then, like, well, I guess Kellen Mond is still Kellen Mond. Like,
there was a moment in time this year where we thought, oh, maybe he's really turned the corner. He was okay. But
we're saying that about a team that finished, what, fifth in the playoff ranking?
I guess.
Which is the place to finish. you want to finish fifth every year, unless you think we have a team that can win the dadgum thing. Because if you finish fifth, you can just keep saying, look, dadgum committee.
They wouldn't let us in.
So Jimbo can now recruit with you on the team, they let us in. Look, you're all we're missing.
That's not bad. That's not a bad philosophy.
No, you want to be fifth. Because if you're finished fourth, you get just destroyed in the first round. Yeah, you want to be fifth. It's kind of like you always want to either be in the lottery in the NBA or you want to win the NBA championship. You do not want that 7 seed. That's a disaster. All right. Nerd, thank you so much for joining us. We're not going to talk about basketball, I don't think, because I mean, we played a little bit. We played some pretty bad basketball against Georgia, and we also lost to the number two team. The number two team in the country.
We beat number 12.
That I can safely say Baylor is the best team in America.
Yeah, we're not going to talk basketball when one of us actually got to go to a game. I mean, I went to the Mizzou game. That was fun.
The Mizzou game was the best game Auburn played all year.
Nice little atmosphere.
By a mile.
It was it's good. It was good times. It was nice to feel a little bit normal again.
Does Bruce just shut Justin Powell down at this point and say, look, let's just chalk it up to next year? How many games are even left?
I mean, I don't know if he'll ever like
eight.
I think he's going to be shut down just because I don't think he's doesn't seem like he's coming anywhere close to
improving. Yeah, I mean, at this point, it'd take him 2 weeks to even get back to like being able to play.
Yeah, because he's not even keeping in game shape. Like he's not practicing, working out, or anything. So
he'd be lucky to be in the same form he was at the beginning of the year.
All he has to do by is the last run game. And stand in the corner, because we don't have anybody on the team that can do that. Just run the court. Stand in the corner and let Sharif find you and make the shot when he finds you in the corner for three. If we can find one guy on the team that can do that, we beat Georgia and come closer to Baylor. But at the moment,
I didn't think we played bad against Baylor. That
we didn't play bad. We still didn't shoot threes.
Jalen Williams did.
We made
it. Jalen Williams had a great week.
Jalen Williams had a really good week. Jalen Williams is the Orange and True Podcast champ of the week.
There we go. I need JT Thor to shoot more threes. Although we've talked about maybe he has shot a bunch more than I thought he had. I don't know. It's Sharif that shot a bunch more than I thought he had.
Yeah, Sharif shot a lot more than you think he has, and he hasn't made a lot of them. But he did make one against he made one against Georgia that excited me and made me think, oh, he's going to start shooting threes now. And then he just didn't take another shot.
Yeah, that was super weird. I mean, I guess percentages for him, though, are – He's better off getting to the basket.
100%.
Because he's going to get in the line. And
he did not against Georgia. That was the difference in that game is that somehow Sharif's magical ability to get to the free throw line was taken from him. And he shot like 8 free throws or something ridiculous like that.
I really think the obvious difference in that game is that we couldn't hit a layup.
And could not hit a layup to save our lives.
We gave up like 30 of them. Yeah. So
it was kind of weird. I don't know if they were afraid of getting foul calls or what, but I mean, a lot of those layups that we gave up were just uncontested.
Yeah.
Not that there was nobody there. It was just, they just kind of watched them go to the basket. And
we looked super hungover in that game, and we never looked like we got out of it. And I hope that's all it was. We'd taken a long trip out to Waco, Texas, and played a huge game against the best team in the country and played fairly well against them. Gave them a better fight than pretty much anybody else has. And then we came back home.
Texas gave them a fight last night.
Did they?
Yeah, and then Baylor ran away with it. But Texas put up a fight. Greg Brown dunked on a dude, ended his life. And then got a technical foul that he shouldn't have gotten because it's college basketball, because he looked at the guy.
Well, I feel also like there are certain things that when you've accomplished them as a human being, you've earned the right to do certain actions. Like,
Devin Cambridge deserved to slap the backboard when he did.
Sure.
That. College basketball technical fouls are the dumbest thing about a sport that is officiated in the dumbest way imaginable.
I agree. I think they should. Drop it all together. Like, imagine if it was just way more, just dunks, shit talking.
No blood, no foul, baby. No blood, no foul.
We have that nerd. We have that league. I can interest you in the National Basketball Association.
I know. I'm saying
they let the guys have a lot of fun on the court. It's pretty great.
In the NBA, you get to eject fans.
Yeah, absolutely, you do.
Go Hawks.
And if LeBron wants to dunk and then slap the backboard with both hands, the referees are like, yeah, man, whatever you want to do, dude. Now, if he wants to, if he, you know, throws the ball at another player, points at him and laughs, that's it.
Yeah,
but if you dunk on a guy and stare at him, one of the most famous plays in basketball history is Allen Iverson hitting a three-pointer and then just demoralizing.
Well, that's a bad
example. Can you imagine if they had teed up Malik in the Elite Eight? Can you imagine?
If you watch the highlight of the Greg Brown dunk, it is the exact same thing.
That's exactly what I thought of when I saw
it. It would be as if they teed up Malik, which I would have gone through my television set to choke out an official.
What's great about that?
And honestly, when I saw it, I was like, oh, they're going to tee him up.
That Malik block, if you look back on it, watch Calipari, because he's just losing it because he wants them to call a technical. He's just he's staring him down.
He's having too much fun out there, guys.
I mean, I think
I forget. Did he throw his team under the bus after that game, or is that just a new thing this year?
It's a this year thing. He normally does not. He normally doesn't do that. Like, I don't
think he's ever just done with this team.
Yeah, I don't ever remember him going, man, Devin Booker just can't play.
He's absolutely done it before. I honestly, I think it's a motivating thing because I don't think it's good. I don't know that it works, but I think he's just trying to humble those dudes, and I think it looks worse than maybe it is.
I think it's also, speaking of Baylor and Kentucky, Baylor's on pace to be the highest ranked KenPom team since the 14-15 Kentucky team.
That's insane.
The 14-15 Kentucky team, guys, had Willie Cauley-Stein and Karl Anthony Towns where they're 4 and they're 5. And Devin Booker came off of the bench at the 2. A guy who once scored 65 points in a regulation NBA game was their backup shooting guard.
Yeah. Embarrassment of riches.
Did they win the national title that year?
No, they did not.
No, they did not.
That's going to get him fired. Sooner or later, though, in our Slack, I may have stumbled across what actually keeps him there, in that they can't fire him because then the team would just completely fall apart. And no matter who they brought in, it would not they would not be able to recover it for at least a year. So,
yeah, if they
that team had 9 NBA players on it. Just want to throw it out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That 14-15 team was his best team and they didn't win the championship. The the reason they're not going to fire him is because if they fired him, he would get hired by some other school.
Yeah. And they'd start cheating as well right away. And
he'd be an analyst for Nick Saban.
No, he would
just for a year. Team,
you got to think of a team like this is a similar situation to Jimbo Fisher getting hired within seconds by Texas A&M. The second it like looked bad.
Well, that's because that was happening. He quit on them trying to get FSU to fire him so that they would.
Right. So yeah. Now you got to think about who is the Texas A&M of collegiate basketball.
And I think Tennessee would turn Rick Barnes in for some recruiting violations. And then,
well, I was going to say, does Alabama fire Nate Oates immediately and just hire John Calipari?
They would look into it, but I bet it would be Florida State. I bet Florida State would be like, great. You're now our new head men's basketball coach. Let's do it. And they pay him, you know, $12 million a year or whatever it is he's making now. Yeah. He's the highest paid basketball coach in America.
Yeah, of course he is. But does Duke ever go after him?
But it's not. I also want to say this again to people who listen to this podcast for whatever reason at this point and are still.
Honestly, if you're still at this point, I'm impressed. Thanks,
and,
Mom.
And are still under the impression that like there's some apples to apples comparison to be made between a Nick Saban and a John Calipari. It is so much more difficult to win a championship in college basketball.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
So like. To say Kentucky fans are going to get mad because he hasn't won a national championship in a number of years. Man, if they are, they're idiots because he's gone. It isn't like he's missed a bunch of tournaments.
Yeah, but they don't care about that, Crow. They really don't.
But they don't care
that he signs, puts a bunch of dudes in the NBA either. That's the other thing.
The things you can control in college basketball in terms of like things you should judge a coach on. Are winning your conference tournament, and getting high seeds in the tournament, and maybe even like a Sweet 16. Trying to say dude has to win a NCAA tournament title every couple of years is crazy talk because one's doing that. Even Coach K is not doing that.
Yeah, but he's won one in 11 years. So I don't know. I think I think they expect more than that.
When was Coach K's last championship? I don't know.
Too bad we don't have Will on the pod, or Dr. McLaughlin.
I'm pulling it up now. Let's see. 2015 for Duke.
Okay. So it's been 5 years since Coach K has won.
And I'd say he's probably won one every 8 years.
I want to say he's won five, and he's been there since 1979 or something crazy like that.
Yeah, so that's about every 8 years.
Yeah.
And
Duke has tournament has titles in 91, 92, 01, 10, and 15.
K's also never missed a tournament, though.
He's about to miss one this year, baby.
Is he?
I just want us to have this conversation about Nick Saban. Like, I want us to have this conversation about Nick Saban in the near
future. This is the conversation. If all of a sudden Alabama were to somehow lose three football games in two consecutive seasons.
Okay, stop. Stop talking dirty to me.
Then you will see.
Oh, absolutely.
People say, is Nick Saban on the hot seat going into that third year? And the answer is yes. He would be on the hot seat. 9-3, 2 years in a row, Alabama, he's on the hot seat.
Yeah, the one thing Cal has not
even
done
if it's the next 2 years.
This is the first time he's really looked like they've looked inept like this, but never for a full season. They always have it together by about now. His predecessors that did get fired all had, other than Pitino who left for the Celtics, have all had a really bad or just mediocre. Like Tubby Smith had a bunch of mediocre years, and. So I guess there is that.
Who was the dude that directly preceded him?
Oh,
I don't remember his name.
Tubby was right after Pitino. It was the guy.
No, directly preceded Cal.
Oh, yeah. That's
He was kind of a joke.
The guy right after Tubby. He was there for like 2 years. It was not good. Yeah.
And then he went to A&M?
Irm looking kind of like Bill Self.
Billy Gillespie.
Billy Gillespie.
Didn't he go to A&M? Didn't he lie on his resume? There's something else. There's some scandal with Billy Gillespie that I remember being hilarious.
Current head coach at Tarleton State.
Yeah, that's just down the road.
Say what now?
He went from Kentucky to Texas Tech to Ranger College to Tarleton State.
Tarleton State.
Yeah.
In Abilene. And he's from Abilene.
Yeah, he's from Abilene, and you don't ever want to go from Kentucky to Texas Tech to Ranger College.
Ranger College in Ranger, Texas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not very creative.
That was not a great hire by them. I wonder, where did he come from before? Like, where? Why did they hire him?
Was it Texas A&M? Yeah, I think he has like a Texas A&M connection. I don't know why I keep thinking.
Yeah, he was at A&M for four seasons in UTEP before that.
Oh, the old Tony Barbie route.
Yeah, Billy Gillespie. This is great podcasting. Gillespie air talk.
It'll never be as bad as it was under Gillespie, under Cal. I guess that's your comfort, but sooner or later. I think Cal probably has to win a title next year. He's on the hot. Like, it starts heating up because I think there's already people up there that are like, okay, this is getting a little long in the tooth here.
He had a DWI at Kentucky. That was the
scandal.
That was the issue at Kentucky.
What's your BAC got to be to get a DWI in Lexington?
He actually had enough of an issue that they took away his license.
Yikes.
Yeah, man. Those teams were bad. I can understand it in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, Cal will never, it could never get that bad.
Cal will never be so bad that he attempts
because he's going to have five more.
Well, under the influence of alcohol.
He'll have at least five more NBA guys on the team next year.
That's the thing about Cal. This is bad. They won the conference last year, didn't they? Like,
yeah. That's the thing. I guess you just keep putting the coins in the slot.
You don't fire him after this year. He might go ahead and win the conference again next year,
right?
And what are you gonna do? Fire the coach that won the SEC? Yeah. No,
man, that's a conversation I'm pretty sure I've heard before.
You can't fire him. You cannot fire a guy who
beat Bama and Jordan Hare, right?
Champion.
Literally, no one recruits better than this guy. I mean, the only guy that comes close is Kay, and that's because he was just taking dudes from the USA Olympic basketball development team.
For sure. Every year.
And they're all, you know, paying people, so whatever.
Everybody's cheating, and I don't care. Like, I had a Baylor friend get mad at me because he's like, Auburn fans are accusing Scott Drew of cheating to get Davion Mitchell. And I go, no serious Auburn fan cares. Because no serious Auburn fan is going to be like. 98%
of Auburn fans don't know who the Baylor head coach is.
Yeah.
Defense, Bruce Pearl did say he recruited him off his team.
But apparently they're. Allegedly, there were fans claiming that Scott Drew was in person at Davion Mitchell's dorm on campus in Auburn, which is just insanity.
I'm going with that.
If he was, that's more on Bruce than it is on Scott Drew. Like, it's not – most Auburn fans are well-adjusted enough to realize, like, yeah man, we're all doing it. Everyone's doing that. And if you're not that way –
My only problem is that it feels like we would get in trouble for it, and they don't ever. Like, Kentucky is like, not a word has been said about them, and there's no way they weren't wrapped up in all the other stuff that the other big Nike schools were all wrapped up in. It's insane. It is insane to think that they are like, oh yeah, well, they're completely clean. They're not involved at all.
Yeah.
And that part, that's the part that's frustrating, is that. These teams get away with it scot-free, and we didn't even do what they did and have.
We got to cheat better, Chief. Simple
that's
as
true.
That.
Cheat better.
Or just get enough dirt on the other guys that they can't turn you in.
I mean, the NCAA wasn't going to say anything anyway. So,
guys, I enjoyed tonight's conversation. Nerd, thank you for coming on. I hope that everyone listening to this has a War Eagle weekend, and we'll see you next week.
The War Eagle.